You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we're less than 2 months out from the midterm elections. We'll get an update on how the race for governor is shaping up. First, Nike debuted a new ad campaign last week that features former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick. Kaepernick has been at the center of a national debate since 2016 when he began kneeling during the national anthem before games, trying to call attention to the unequal treatment of African Americans in the U.S., particularly in terms of police violence. Nike's campaign includes a print ad and a TV commercial that premiered during the NFL season opener on Thursday night.
Don't believe you have to be like anybody to be somebody. If you're born a refugee, don't let it stop you from playing soccer for the national team at age 16. Don't become the best basketball player on the planet. Be bigger than basketball. Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything.
The ads led to a range of reactions, from praise for Nike to people swearing off the company and destroying their products. Others are questioning whether Kaepernick's message can survive a corporate endorsement. Tyler R. Tynes is a staff writer for SB Nation, where he's been covering the intersection of race, politics, and sports. Tyler, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, you've been following this story, as a lot of people have in the country. What do you think of Nike putting Colin Kaepernick front and center in this ad campaign?
I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense for Nike, for their profits, for their margins, for anybody who is allegedly stuck in the middle of this, who believes, especially white consumers, who believe that they want to do something or they're empathetic to this cause but don't have a way to really support or don't really necessarily agree with protest. And so Nike can hone in on all of that by being the biggest beneficiary of all of this and say, you know, here's this product, here's this, here are these ads, and here's things that you can kind of get behind. And, you know, you might like that. You might get that. But the winners of this aren't black people. They aren't people of color. They aren't black athletes or the springtime of athletic, of athletic resistance. It's nothing like that. In the most generous rendering, Colin Kaepernick is increasing his message through a branding opportunity, but he's abdicated his career and risked his life to remind the country of the injustices that people have faced, because we have to understand, at the bare minimum, capitalism is only a game.
So what do you think of Kaepernick's decision, his personal decision to be involved with this? Some people have criticized him for, as you're hinting at, kind of letting his message be co-opted for commercial gain. Yet on the other hand, it's renewing this platform.
I mean, historically, capitalism has taken so many different black athletes and people of large black allure. So nothing of this is surprising, right? Black athletes and black protests has always been defanged by white politicians, white corporations, et cetera. And so none of that should be surprising, nor should it be alarming that a man like Colin Kaepernick, who lost so much profit and so much revenue standing for black and brown rights, is not able to actually profit from protest, at least in some manner, right? In the opposite way, we've seen Spike Lee and Nike commercials with Michael Jordan. We've seen Charles Barkley indignantly blare in a Nike campaign that he's not, you know, our role model. We've seen Orenthal J. Simpson and Hertz commercials. We've seen this happen numerous times, and the fear that I have for Colin Kaepernick is that he's marrying such a flawed entity, Nike with its sweatshops, Nike with its capitalistic gain, that because the black athlete has been repeatedly used by politicians and corporations forever, we don't really want to see the end or the defanging of such a powerful moment, not only in American history, but during a decade of protest where radical action is the only thing to be desired by black constituents.
What is it that made this issue so powerful, so controversial, these protests during the national anthem protesting unequal treatment of African Americans? What is it that made this such an issue that we're still talking about it?
People still get murdered. And so you can look at the issue in Dallas where a white police officer walked into a black man's home and murdered him as he was living there. And I think to the umpteenth at this point, evidence just keeps piling up that we cannot, you know, go to the store and buy Skittles and iced tea. We cannot buy cigarillos. We cannot do almost anything under the guise of Americana without being afraid for our lives. And even to this point, at this moment, we can't do the right thing if you're Philando Castile, and you cannot sit in your home without a police officer barging in and taking your humanity from you, kidnapping your soul. And so that's why this still finds allure, at least in so many different parts of America, is because America has not truly grappled fully with the fact that officers of the state are extrajudiciously killing black and brown people disproportionately compared to white people and specifically unarmed. And so that's just one of the issues before you even mention equality when it comes to education, upward mobility, and a plethora of other things that are keeping black people specifically indentured in America's states. And if that's the truth, then the people who haven't grappled with the entirety of this message and have left it only to a form of white patriotism, they're never going to understand, and they're always going to whitewash the messaging.
Talking to Tyler Tynes from SB Nation about Nike ads featuring Colin Kaepernick. Tyler, at the end of last year, you wrote a piece on race, sports, and politics, making the point, among other things, that we're not in a new situation here with these Colin Kaepernick stories. This goes way back. And you wrote in that piece about some of the earliest black football players in the late 1940s and 1950s to play with white people and how they were targeted on the field during plays, sometimes between plays. Can you tell some of that story?
I mean, this has been the history of black footballers within how football has operated in America forever. I mean, if we can believe that black people were kidnapped from Africa's shores and brought here, made the toil in America's fields and labor without payment, and stripped of their sanity and their sanctity only at that point for sports to be introduced to the plantation, it starts a troubling timeline across history where black people and black football and black athletics have never been prosperous to the black body. And we've been under this false pretense that football is actually for the black body when that's not true. Johnny Bright was attacked by a football player who was endorsed by the Klan in Louisiana, and his jaw was broken in front of reporters in a trick play. The activist Paul Robeson had his fingernails ripped from his hands in 1912 at Rutgers attempting to play football. Jack Trice was killed at Iowa State. Greg Page was killed at Kentucky in 1967. SMU had massive issues. Daryl Hill had issues in Maryland in the 50s and 60s. And so this is just the truth of where we've been at before you even go into protest of what black footballers have been able to do. And so I think by ignoring that or being oblivious to the history that we have here, we don't really remember everything that's going on. I mean, Lenny Moore, who was a tailback for the Colts in 1961 in Roanoke during an exhibition game between Baltimore and the Steelers, saw Jim Crow seating. Local NAACP chapters filed lawsuits. The NFL said that the problem was going to be resolved. He went into the stadium and saw that there was still segregated seating. And he said that he had to reach through a chain link fence in order to shake the hands of the black people who were there. And no image had ever made him realize with such force just what black people have been up against through American history. We have always been on the outside looking in. And if football is a tool and a tutor for all of this, we should only see a cycle of the same exact thing where a day of reckoning came to football. Everything was co-opted and gentrified and whitewashed and given back to the white majority, and still black people find themselves unequal.
Why do you think that whenever a new story like this comes along, it seems new and fresh, given some of the history you just laid out there?
It feels new and fresh mostly for the fact that it would seem that white people are living under this fictive missive that none of this has ever happened. That egalitarianism can exist in the United States, that we can be post-racial, that we are living in equality arm in arm with black and white sisters together, holding arms and running into this fanciful meadow of fake dreams. And that's just not true, right? And equally that the majority, white people, do not have to live in the same horrors that black and brown people have to experience every single day in America. And if that's also true in the way that we are teaching our history to our kids, the way we are raising each generation, this same fanciful dream is being given over and over and over again with no one upending the status quo. So it takes something like not only the civil rights movement, but also this decade of protest, but also men like Colin Kaepernick, like Eric Reed, like Russell Okung, like Kenny Stills, and et cetera, to continue to kneel and give black power salutes, but specifically to kneel and have radical action enter these byways of American lore where people think they can escape politics, but the reality is that politics can be escaped by no one and nowhere.
What would you like to have seen from the NFL as an organization and from team ownership when this first started?
If they would have cared about black people, if the NFL had just maybe even just at the bare minimum said that they see what is going on, said that there is validity to what their players are preaching, then maybe at the bare minimum that would have been acceptable. But what we had here really was the NFL basically saying that none of this existed and they wanted their players to stand. And with the 2016 election happening, Donald Trump used his version of white supremacy to really keep black free speech docile. And if you look at that piece in the Day of Reckoning in SB Nation, you kind of start to see through that theory and that formulation that again, this is cyclical. It always takes something like this to get to the highest climax of black protest and radical action for it then to be stripped back down and refed back to the majority. And so still, here we are in season three, since Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid originally took a knee to protest, not the national anthem, not the Star Spangled Banner, but during it, the injustice is going on to black and brown Americans here. And we're still seeing that people don't understand the message. Polls show that. NFL players show that. NFL owners are saying that. And now they just want to return to normalcy, which is a reality of how we have these things happening.
We're talking with Tyler Tynes, staff writer for SB Nation, about the reaction to Nike's new ad featuring Colin Kaepernick that says, quote, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything." You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this ad? Is it smart business by Nike? What do you think of the wider issues that are attached to it here? What do you think the ad means for Kaepernick's stated goal of bringing attention to police violence, among other issues? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Tyler Tynes, staff writer for SB Nation, about Nike's new ad with Colin Kaepernick and the reaction it's getting. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Were you glad to see this or upset to see Nike using Kaepernick in its ads? Good move on Kaepernick's part, on Nike's part. And what do you think of the ongoing issue of these protests by NFL players, African-American NFL players in particular, during the national anthem, trying to raise awareness of issues of racial inequality? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. David is on the line in Oshkosh. David, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So when it comes down to the people that are offended by this ad, it always goes back to somehow it's disrespectful to the members of our military. So every time I hear somebody talk about this, you always hear they say, all the veterans I talk to say this, or all the veterans I talk to say that. So I created a poll on Facebook and prefaced it in big, bold letters, only vote if you are active or veteran military. Now, I realize this isn't very scientific, and I can't monitor that very well. But as of this morning, before I had started, and it was a simple question, are you offended by the Kaepernick Nike ad, yes or no? Before I went to work this morning, there was just shy of 1,100 votes on it. And as it sits right now, 65% of respondents are saying no, they're not offended. Vast majority of them being actual veterans. And I think that's important for a lot of people to know that the majority of veterans don't seem to be bothered by this.
David, thanks for that call. And this is one of the big criticisms, Tyler, that, okay, whether or not we like what you're protesting about, critics say, not during the national anthem. That's, that's a time where we honor U.S. veterans. What do you think of that part of the debate?
What I don't think people get is that it doesn't matter whether active military or veterans care or don't care. It doesn't matter. So by running to them and asking them, do they care? And if they say, "Harumph, we don't," I mean, that doesn't matter, right? I mean, people are being murdered. That's the end goal of this. If we are going to war for sanctimonious reasons and we're also murdering people, then we should care individually and domestically that people are equally being murdered by enforcers of state and government law. And because of that, we have to understand equally that protest is about disruption and dissent and upending the status quo. So it doesn't matter if you care or not, but by you responding, it's touched a nerve in some way, or you're defending the thing that has touched a nerve. And so if you agreed with the protest, we wouldn't be here. That's the whole point of it.
David, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Rich on the line and Nina. Rich, hi.
Hello there. My take is that, first of all, the NFL – if I'm not mistaken, their rules state that they are supposed to stand at attention for the national anthem. If I were to disregard some of my work policies in that, I could be dismissed. Second of all, John Elway had even mentioned that the Broncos had offered him a contract, and he turned it down. And I think that's part of that is so that he can stay unemployed to bring more attention to his cause.
All right, Rich, thanks for the call. Tyler, Rich says it's a workplace issue. These are NFL guidelines. You follow them or you risk being fired.
Okay, so this is a little dumb for a few reasons, right? First, the Google machine will tell us that John Elway gave Colin Kaepernick an option to come to the Broncos before his protest started in 2016 and for low below the wage that he was worth. Why would you take a job that doesn't meet to your actual criteria or standards? That's one. Easily debunked, 5 seconds of Google. Part two is millionaires don't adhere to the same rules as regular people. And so if you break your rules at your office or wherever you do work and you get fired, I mean, that kind of sucks, right? We don't play by the same rules if we're dealing with actual entertainers, millionaires, and people who pay different taxes than you. And so just because you have to live to a certain standard doesn't mean somebody else does. And at the end of the day, the same issue is the same of people are being murdered. And so if people are being murdered and you feel strongly about that because they look like you or your family member or your mother or your father or could have been you or you've been stopped by police or you live an identity in a reality that is different from the usual white person in America, well, then maybe you feel compelled to do something about that. And at times when your humanity is on the line, it might be worth your job.
Rich, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Jane on the line in Sun Prairie. Jane, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I love Tyler. He is the first one that has articulated what I've been thinking this whole time. I first want to say that I think the NFL should be protested against because they didn't, from day one, say that we support the minorities in our country and on our teams, and we are intelligent, and we know that they are protesting the kind of treatment they get, and especially police brutality. And that's why I think the NFL should be protested against. And instead, they've weakly adopted Trump's narrative that this is, oh, boo-hoo, somehow against our flag, our nation, our veterans. That is such a false narrative, and people have just sucked right into it. They're racist. They're inherently racist. I, for one, a very, very lucky person that I was born not a minority except for the woman part of me, am stunned on a daily basis how minorities don't protest every day. It's stunning to me that they are as peaceable as they are. I don't know that I would be as gracious.
Jane, thanks for the call. Tyler, your thoughts?
I think the thing here is that the NFL has found a way to alienate its really any diverse moment of its fan base so frequently, right? They don't care about where the black fan is at this point. They very much don't care about where female fans are in the same expanse. And so if America's church is alienating 70% of its potential consumers here, including Latinx people as well, they're only really making a product for cis hetero white men, mostly skewing Christian. That's not a product I really want. And if I wasn't from Philadelphia and my Eagles didn't just win the Super Bowl, I definitely would find it much, much more harder to continue to watch football. And I think that's something that we should continue to grapple with. This shouldn't just be a blanketed answer, right? If black players are saying they are being treated unfairly, and the first thing that you can think about is a white missive about a flag or an anthem or America's first song, then you are missing the entire concept of the point. But to other people, it becomes harder and harder to continue to watch and absorb this product. Mostly for the fact that the product ain't good. I mean, you can watch college football, and it's a lot better than what we're getting on NFL Sundays. I mean, ask a Lions fan. And so there really is not a reason outside of the fact that America's blood pact with football is so strong that we're never going to detach ourselves from it until we truly see somebody get killed on a field in primetime football. And even then, I don't know if we'll detach ourselves from it.
Do you think that there's another professional sport that has handled some of these issues, if not perfectly, better than the NFL?
No professional sports league has handled this well at all. Baseball sanctimoniously has ousted the people who have done so, and the people have stopped kneeling. Hockey, numerous players have talked about maybe doing this, and they were told they'd be banned from their international teams and would not play on regular rosters, and they got death threats as well. Or it's such an international game that black Canadians and black Europeans are saying they really don't have the same qualms because they're not black Americans, which is understandable. And in basketball, they've had a longer anthem policy on the books than NFL has. And after a call to action from LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Carmelo Anthony, and more, the NBA has not lived up to its standard of having eloquent black players speak about these issues. But when you get to cities like Sacramento, when Stephon Clark was murdered in this year, those people, the constituents of those teams, are saying, well, what more can be done? And the players are saying, we've done it perfectly. And so, no, at least within football and the conservative vehicle that the NFL is, breeds, and uplifts, they've never pretended to care about the black body politic. And if that is to be true, then we must look more at places like the NBA, who would easily say they're doing well, but restrict their players more when it comes to radical protest. And so every league here is at fault, because no league is uplifting or even attempting to uplift the message without coming at the very bare minimum. And usually it's reactionary than it is for being progressive.
As a sports writer, as a, I think a sports fan, if maybe ambivalently some, Tyler, do you ever think of just giving up on the big leagues?
I do. And when you look at the football, the college football deaths that have happened every single year, when you look at things like Maryland and Jordan McNair, when you look at how the Olympics are formatted and poor people have to suffer while stadiums get built, when you look at the meritocracy that is holding down a lot of black lives in these different sports, when you look at the wage gap between the WNBA and their black players and the women there compared to NBA players, when you look at the fact that women can't even play hardball at a professional level that is looked at in the same way as Major League Baseball, it is often, daily, very hard to believe not only that I write in this profession, but also that I can still enjoy sports. And so that is a thing that I grapple with either daily or weekly. And I doubt I'll ever stop being a sports fan. I'm a Philadelphian, and sports are really what we do. But at the same time, I think it would be wrong not to question sports' hold on the world that we have, specifically the country that we have, and try to poke holes in the logic that these corporations and these leagues feed to American citizens, because at the end of the day, though sports have existed for the entirety of American history, it's not everything in the world.
We'll leave it there, Tyler. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tyler Tynes is a staff writer for SB Nation, where he covers the intersection of race, politics, and sports. We were talking about Nike's new ad with Colin Kaepernick and the reaction athletes get when they speak out on political and social issues.